A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 121. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The First Man in the Moon. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is the 2010 adaptation of the H.G. Wells novel that we're discussing. The adaptation was actually done by Mark Gatiss. It was a 90-minute film that was done for BBC4, and it used an additional little framing device that they added to what was in the book that takes place in 1969. So they connected the first man in the moon to the events of the actual moon landing, which was sort of nice.
And it's a fun show. We've got some steampunk type ideas of sort of advanced technology in a slightly earlier era, and we've got up-to-date CGI special effects and a quite sort of charming production for us to talk about here, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And of course, this is not just men on the moon. This is the first man in the moon. Professor Cavour and Julius Bedford, who we described in the previous episode, have reached the moon in this capsule that has this substance, Cavourite, painted onto these rolling shutters, and the Cavourite is actually opaque to gravity, so they can control when they are attracted to bodies by gravity and when they are not. And they use this to be able to land on the moon, and they continue to discover things, including the fact that there is a thin but breathable atmosphere on the moon.
Yes, that's right. That's one of the first big surprises they find on the moon, is that they can actually breathe without the suits they brought with them. And then while they continue their explorations on the surface of the moon, they witness a strange structure and in fact see something opening on the surface of the moon and lead into within the moon, I guess. So as you can tell from the title, this is the first man in the moon. And before they know it, and we know it really, they are inside the moon and prisoners of, well, strange moon creatures, creatures that Professor Cavour dubs the Selenites. And we'll talk a little bit about those in the moment, but quite sort of like dramatic events as soon as they get there, really, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And what we discover is that in this H.G. Wells vision, the moon actually has an alien civilization, but it is not on the surface of the moon at all. It's entirely within the structure of the moon and sort of a subterranean sort of thing.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Sort of wonderful ideas and sort of very interesting in the way they delivered it for us here. So we should talk a little bit more about the novel, and we want to get on to talk about other adaptations. So we have H.G. Wells, of course, one of the giants of British science fiction, well known, and in particular for his novels War of the Worlds, The Invisible Man, which we covered a sort of adaptation of for British television, previously on British Invaders. And of course, his other books, The Time Machine and The Shape of Things to Come. And then this particular novel, or quite short novel, I guess, Brian, published in 1901. It's not very long, is it?
No, it isn't. Most of his novels actually weren't.
So it's quite a short novel. As I say, 1901. It includes, interestingly enough, a reference within the novel to another science fiction writer, to Jules Verne, and to his book, From the Earth to the Moon. So they do share some sort of similar themes about very early on sort of adventures to the moon. So that's the book, 1901. Again, as I say, one of the classics of British science fiction.
Yes, absolutely. And at the time when H.G. Wells was writing these books, the term science fiction did not exist yet. But what we would come to know as science fiction in the modern sense really was mostly based on the works of H.G. Wells. So he, in some ways, was like the father of science fiction worldwide, not just for the British things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's quite right, isn't it? If you look back at the sorts of creators of science fiction literature, you'd choose probably H.G. Wells and Jules Verne.
Yes. Now, there were other adaptations, as we mentioned. The first ever science fiction film was A Trip to the Moon by George Méliès, and that was based on both the Jules Verne and H.G. Wells novels on the subject, and it was a 14-minute silent film, or when at the correct 16 frames per second, it was 14 minutes. And it was sort of a classic, and you see imagery from it quite frequently.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it must be one of the most famous bits of film ever, because clips of it and images from it are shown so many times. And again, rather charmingly, this 2010 adaptation of The First Men in the Moon includes a sort of dream sequence, which the Julius Bedford character has, which is a sort of direct sort of tribute or homage to the Méliès film. And I mentioned in our last show that there are cameos from the other two members of the League of Gentlemen acting troupe, Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton. And if you're looking for them, it's in that dream sequence that you have to sort of pay attention. But it's a lovely little sequence, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. It was quite clever. There was also a 1919 British silent film that is an adaptation of The First Man in the Moon. And that, unfortunately, is missing. So we don't know a great deal about it, but it is actually on the most wanted list for the British Film Institute. So you never know. Maybe that'll be found someday. But it is interesting that that was done.
Yes, absolutely. And many, many film historians would love to see moments from that, or, of course, the whole thing. Yeah, one of the most wanted pieces of British film. And as we're recording, it's not long since two missing Doctor Who episodes have come to light. So who knows, Brian?
Stranger things have happened.
Absolutely. The other version on film that's much more easy to get hold of, obviously, is a 1964 film version of The First Men in the Moon. And some quite impressive and familiar names crop up in this adaptation, in that the screenplay was written by none other than Nigel Neal, that name that we keep coming back to here again and again on British Invaders.
Yes, a classic writer for British science fiction, for sure.
And another famous name, Ray Harryhausen, produced the stop-motion effects for the Selenites, the moon creatures. And the film starred Lionel Jeffries as Professor Cavour in a very sort of another very enjoyable portrayal of this eccentric character. Sadly, Lionel Jeffries died in 2010, and so the BBC Four adaptation that we're talking about does include a tribute, or at least a dedication to him, in the title sequence. And I know Mark Gatiss was a huge fan of Lionel Jeffries' work as well, so an interesting and a nice little tribute to him there.
Yes, absolutely. And then, of course, there's the adaptation we've been talking about from 2010, which is actually quite faithful to the original H.G. Wells novel. It does add this framing device of the moon landing happening in 1969 and so on. And they made some clever changes to the story to explain why in 1909 there was this atmosphere on the moon and there was not in 1969. And they did a couple of clever little things with that. But the ideas tend to be quite well tied to the Wells novel, as was most of the story.
Yes, it is, actually. It's a very sort of faithful portrayal, I think, of the book. And in particular, I think, you know, the description of Professor Cavour and the way Mark Gatiss portrays him, and, of course, the capsule that they build and the way that the roller blinds work is very much taken straight from the book. So, yeah, they did a very good job, I think.
I can see snow.
Snow? Impossible. Probably.
Hang on, can't see a thing now.
Well, we must wait, old man.
Wait?
For the beginning of the lunar day. Can you reach the electric heaters?
Hurry,
or we'll freeze. Yes, the atmosphere suits are all prepared. We shall be all set when the time comes.
What are you doing?
What does it look like? I have almost finished The Tempest. Can't wait to find out what happens at the end.
But
patience, Bedford, old man. The moon has been here for millions of years. I'm sure it will wait a little longer.
So I think that leads us into our discussion of what we thought about this show. So the good and the bad. So, Eamon, what did you like about The First Men in the Moon?
Well, we'll run straight into it from what we've just been talking about. I did like the fact that this was a very, it's a very clever adaptation, but it's also quite a faithful adaptation. And as you said, just perhaps the ending's changed, but even that is based on this rather neat idea from Wells's novel itself. So I think the actual screenplay by Mark Gatiss is really pretty good all the way around. It's sort of funny and exciting and very well done.
Yes, absolutely. I think of H.G. Wells' novels, at least of the ones that I've read, I think The First Man in the Moon is the most dated, the one that sort of stands up to current scrutiny the least, and that's because it has this sort of turn-of-the-century idea that maybe the moon had an atmosphere and, you know, they didn't really know enough about it to know that there wouldn't be life on it. So it has this very sort of early idea of what the moon might possibly be like. So I think because of that, in some ways, it is one of the hardest novels to adapt in a faithful way. And I was quite impressed with how Mark Gatiss did that. It was really quite well done.
Yep, very good. What about the performances? We've really just got the two main performances to talk about. What did you think, Brian?
I thought they were actually really quite good. They certainly got a lot of humor out of the Cavour character, maybe more so than was in the book, but it fits well with what was in the book. And I think the two of them did have some chemistry. And it worked quite well for what it was. I rather liked the performances.
Yes, I did as well. I think Mark Gatiss is fantastic. I can watch him in anything. He's very good in this. He's been very good in Doctor Who, and of course he crops up in the new adaptation of Sherlock, which he's doing with Stephen Moffat. And then Rory Kinnear, who we should perhaps mention is the son of the famous British comedy actor Roy Kinnear. Rory Kinnear, very sort of successful and acclaimed actor now. He's cropping up in lots of stuff on British television. And again, he's very good here in perhaps a slightly tricky role of Julius Bedford, who's motivated by, you know, his need for money and looking for the opportunities. But he does very well.
Bedford is much more the straight man, if you like. He's the more ordinary person who is less flamboyant. And so he has to hold his own while, you know, not being as flamboyant as Gatiss can. And that is always a little tricky and doesn't always work out, but it worked quite well in this case.
Absolutely. It's a very effective two-hander. There aren't really many other performances. We've mentioned a couple of cameos. I'll mention that Julia Deakin, who played the landlady in Spaced, she crops up very briefly, if you can spot her. I should also mention, I guess while we're talking about the acting, that Rory Kinnear's makeup when he is aged for the 1969 framing sequence, that was very good as well, I thought, Brian. He's under a lot of latex, but it worked quite well.
Yeah, I think that worked reasonably well as well.
So what else about this production stood out for you, Brian?
Well, I rather liked the look of it. I liked the look of the capsule at all, which they changed a little bit from the book. In the book, it was a sphere, and they sort of mentioned a sphere, but then made it like a multi-sided capsule. But the look of the capsule, both in the outside and the inside, and the look of the space travel with it, I really quite liked.
It's like a huge steampunk 20-sided dice, isn't it?
It is sort of like that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is good. I mean, I think the look of the production, and in particular the focus that they had on the design of the capsule and the interior of the capsule and the costumes, it all looks very good. I liked all of that as well. So we've also got space travel and moon sequences, and the dream sequence, which we've mentioned already, as a sort of homage to Georges Méliès' trip to the moon. What did you think about all those, Brian?
Generally, I thought they worked quite well. The tribute to A Trip to the Moon was a little bit out of left field. I wasn't expecting it at all, but it was kind of neat to see it, for sure.
Yes, it is. As you say, it is come as a surprise, but once you realize what they're doing, it's quite impressive.
Something that we had mentioned, the idea of the performances and Bedford being sort of the straight man in this, there was a moment that I think was a very good character moment where they realized that they could use this spacecraft. They could potentially have multiple spacecrafts and go all over the place around the solar system and use them to gather minerals, use them to take people around for a steep fee and so on. And you had Bedford's sort of realization of what this was. And he says at that point, that's Imperial. It was really well done as a character moment and sort of gave Bedford that extra depth, which I think was really nice. And it took sort of much more text in the book to establish that. So that was kind of neat.
Right. Yes, it was a good moment. So was there anything that was less good about the production for you, Brian? Anything you didn't like so much?
Well, there was very little that I really didn't like. Of things that were a little bit weaker, one thing that I have to mention is that they made it into a very sort of light and fun type of production, which was nice and sort of brought some comedy elements into it. But that was sort of a bit of a change from the original novel. They took something that was a quite serious kind of story and made it into a much lighter type of story, which is okay, but it's something I feel I have to acknowledge that it is a particular sort of stylized take on what was done in the book. Although content-wise, it was quite faithful. That difference in approach was definitely there.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the BBC, I think, were very much going for this this word, charming. It is a sort of charming and slightly light-hearted adaptation, which is fun, but as you say, perhaps misses a little bit of the serious tone of Wells's original. I'm going to mention the CGI for the space creatures, the moon creatures, the Selenites. We have obviously said, we've mentioned that there are inhabitants within the moon and they show up and they are portrayed in fairly modern CGI. And I was slightly disappointed by that. I actually would have preferred a man in a bug suit, I think, at this point, Brian, which of course is more what we got in the 1964 film combined with some stop motion animation as well.
Yes, the Selenites with their sort of CGI, upright walking insect kind of look, they were okay, but it was very obviously CGI. It was very clear what it was and that it was not something that was actually physically in the room with them. So that was a little bit weak, I suppose.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention in the good and the bad?
I don't think so. I think this was really something that worked quite well.
Okay, so we should turn to the availability of this show. As I say, originally broadcast in 2010 on BBC Four.
And it's been repeated on BBC Four since then as well.
And then we got a Region 2 DVD release, which came out quite soon after the broadcast. And it includes as well, so there's a making of feature with interviews with the various members, in particular with Mark Gatiss. And there's some deleted and extended scenes. And that's available to buy on Amazon at the moment, quite cheaply. And it's also available on Love Film for rental.
I believe that DVD has a commentary on it as well.
Oh, right. I haven't listened to that.
And there is, unfortunately, no Region 1 DVD release. As far as I know, there has not been a North American release or broadcast for this at all.
Okay, that's a shame. So you will need a multi-region DVD player to watch the import then, Brian.
Yes, you will.
Turning to the 1964 film with Lionel Jeffries and the script by Nigel Neal and Ray Harryhausen special effects, that's also widely available and quite easy to get hold of, both on Amazon and on the various rental sites, so you can watch that one.
And the original H.G. Wells novel is on Project Gutenberg. It is public domain in some countries and not in others. It's one of those sort of gray areas there. There is a free podcast audiobook available. And of course, there are many published editions in many different countries. Often, if you get a collection of four or five or six H.G. Wells novels, it will be in there.
Okay. And also, we've been talking about Georges Méliès' film, A Trip to the Moon, which is in the public domain, and you can watch it on YouTube, hopefully at the right frame rate, Brian. You're looking for about a 14-minute film, I gather.
Yes, that's right.
So, and as ever, if you've watched any of these various adaptations, do let us know what you think about them. But I guess that brings us to what we think about this particular show, Brian.
Absolutely. So I will kick this off with our recommendations and say, I would definitely recommend this. It was a really fun show. It combines some lighthearted fun with a bit of comedy, with some solid classic science fiction. The performances were good. It's just an hour and a half, and it is well worth watching.
Absolutely. It's a double thumbs up from us here on British Invaders, because I loved this show. I thought it was delightful. It's great fun. It's got the script by and a fine performance by one of our favourites here on British Invaders, Mark Gatiss. So, yeah, it's a wonderful show. It's only an hour and a half. It's quite cheap on Amazon at the moment, less than £10. So certainly I would recommend watching it as well. And as ever, please let us know what you think about it.
Yes, please do. So, in summary, The First Man in the Moon was a 2010 adaptation of the 1901 H.G. Wells novel that told the story of two men constructing a capsule that had a substance that was opaque to gravity and would allow them to move out into space and control what they were attracted to by gravity. And, of course, they land this capsule on the moon and discover that there is this alien civilization underneath the surface of the moon. And the adaptation gives you some lighthearted fun and comedy involved as well in a nice little 90-minute science fiction show.
It's a wonderful little show. Please do watch it and join in the discussion on the Facebook page.
Absolutely.
So, join us next time when we're sticking with the BBC, but we're moving to a much darker show, I think, Brian. We're jumping back to 1998 to talk about a series called Invasion Earth.
Yes, that's definitely one that is a little different from things we've been talking about lately, so that should be fun.
Yep.
So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com. And you can find us on www.britishinvaders.com. All of our old episodes are available there. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon in England, signing off.